Hi, I'm Kathleen Dunn, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour is the author of a really informative and a lot of fun book, The Long and Short of It, The Madcap History of the Skirt. It goes way back in time to look at what people wore a long, long time ago, a wrap, and it goes straight through to the miniskirt and beyond the miniskirt. And looks at the first lady of fashions. It looks at wartime and the utility skirts, what bicycling did for skirts. And, well, it just goes on and on because it covers the whole history of the skirt. And we're going to be talking about that this hour of the program. Allie Basie is our guest. She is the author of The Long and Short of It, The Madcap History of the Skirt. She's a fashion, travel, and lifestyle writer who lives in Seattle and enjoys, she says, carousing in pencil, in case you don't know what kind of skirts those are, we'll talk about them, circle and midi skirts, the world's original garment. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, 227-2050, 227-2050. Allie, thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, really, it is a fun book. So it was the world's original garment?
That's correct.
It was worn by men and women?
It was originally worn by men and women. It was only about 900 years ago that men switched to tights.
Huh. And they decided to wear it, and we're talking about how long ago? We're talking about Neanderthals?
Well, I think as far back as there were people, they were covering themselves up with some kind of garment. We have evidence dating back 27,000 years of seeing that people wore skirts. And not just loincloth, not like the Flintstones, but actually trying to think about fashion a little bit, decorating them, putting fringe on them, twisting them, making tapered backsides, really thinking about what it means to present yourself through your clothing.
Oh, interesting. But also they wore them, as you suggest here, to protect their goods from sunburn, frostbite. I like the occasional Randy Neanderthal with a roving eye.
I'm sure women considered that when they thought about their clothing.
Yeah. Isn't it interesting, though, that people were trying to make a fashion statement that long ago? It wasn't just, you know, keeping yourself from being frostbite. It was, here's who I am in the world.
It is very interesting to me. I also found it interesting how there would be periods of time where people thought about fashion and were very specific in the cuts of the skirt and the designs and the decoration. And then it seemed like fashion would take a step back, and for hundreds of years they'd be wearing togas again.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about what happened in the Middle Ages when the ruling knights decided no more skirts and started wearing breeches and tights. How did that come about?
Well, I think men tended to wear their skirts a little bit shorter than women. They exposed an ankle when women still had their skirts dragging on the floor. And as ruling knights became more popular, I think more people were riding horses, more people were emulating the look of these sort of cool guys. And they were wearing their skirts shorter and shorter and wearing tights to keep their legs warm. And through the centuries, their skirts just became shorter and shorter. The tights got longer and longer. And eventually, they were wearing what we now know as pants.
Mm-hmm. And their legs, now we think of, you know, the miniskirt particularly, to look at women's legs, that when we're looking at these medieval guys, they were showing off their legs, right?
Oh, and then some. I mean, that's why the codpiece was invented, because their skirts were so short. And the tights they wore were literally garters, or, you know, held up with garter belts. So they didn't wear underwear back then. Everything was pretty much exposed.
And they didn't take baths either.
They didn't bathe too much.
Yeah.
It wasn't a pleasant time.
No, I guess. Actually, and then you write about pantyhose and said to go way up in time for a while, that we couldn't have had mini skirts, which I've never understood why women wore those, although I never wore them real short. I wore a couple. But you couldn't really have those unless you had pantyhose.
Well, sure. I mean, up until the invention of pantyhose, which was in 1959, I believe, women wore stockings with garters. So all of the skirts needed to be at least as long enough to cover the garter belt for decency's sake.
Mm-hmm.
So when pantyhose were invented, you know, the, as they say, the thigh was the limit. They could make them as high as they wanted.
Mm-hmm. And you end the book with these new kind of, what do you call these? They're not even skirts. They're like nothing. They hang way down on your waist, and you can see your underwear, and you're supposed to wear thongs with them. What's that?
And let's hope they're wearing underwear. As we
see,
they don't always.
Oh, brother, yeah.
It's a very strange trend, and it's kind of fascinating. We keep thinking, you know, how low can they go or how high can they go? And they continue to shock us. These new miniskirts get so tiny. I don't understand it. And in a way, they're wearing a miniskirt that small is as hobbling as something that a woman might have worn in the 19th century that really inhibited their physical freedom.
Right.
When you're wearing a miniskirt that tiny, you can't really have the freedom to move around like you otherwise could instead of a pair of pants or a longer skirt.
Yeah. Well, you brought up an interesting phrase there, inhibiting freedom. When you look at the whole history of the skirt, was there a great long period of time when what women wore, what was fashionable, did inhibit their freedom?
Oh, certainly. The hoop skirt, of course, and all the variations on it through the centuries was very inhibiting. And I find the whole idea of a fashion victim sort of fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
It's curious to me that in periods of time when women were developing a little bit of freedom, that they would then encumber themselves with a skirt that was so inhibiting physically. For instance, the hobble skirt, which was invented in about 1910, literally kept women from walking. It shackled them at their shins and their knees. So the steps that they took couldn't be any longer than 6 inches. And this was in a period of time when women were working to gain the right to vote. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to me that in a time when they're actually gaining so much freedom, they were popularizing a skirt.
Oh, that's interesting. Why do you think that's the case?
I don't know. But I think that would make another good book.
Yeah, it would.
There's the Fashion Victim.
Yeah, that book number two. Pencil skirts. These skirts that inhibit your ability to even walk keep reappearing. Pencil skirts. I remember those now, and they're great pictures in the book as well.
Yeah, aren't the illustrations a lot
Yes,
of fun?
They're wonderful.
The woman who did the illustrations, Leela Corman, she's a real talent. Pencil skirts were reintroduced right after World War II, and again, they were actually popularized as the new hobble skirt, as if that was a benefit to women.
Oh, my.
And they wore them with very high heels and very tight jackets. That's when the girdle was actually reintroduced.
Oh, that was always a great invention. Yeah.
And the corset.
So oh, yeah.
A girdle with the corset and you're good to go. But, the pencil skirt, when it was reintroduced in the 1940s, was very inhibiting. And because it stopped right below the knee, it did limit the stride of women wearing them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, today we see women wearing pencil skirts, but the new fabrics are much more stretchy.
Hmm.
So I don't consider them as inhibiting as they once were.
Mm-hmm. It is amazing how many, many years women had to wear these huge lots of fabric, lots of heaviness, all these petticoats, all these hoops. I mean, there were a lot of years when women dressed that way, most uncomfortable, and it took you a long time to get dressed.
Oh, I'm sure it took a long time, and they needed assistance. And depending on what was the popular undergarment, there's many different kinds of cages that were popular through the centuries. And then they would switch back to petticoats, and they would get rid of the cages and just wear 6 or 8 petticoats at a time. But either way, it was incredibly heavy and dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Walking past a candle was not something you did without thinking consciously about it.
Mm-hmm. And weren't there some kinds of laws enacted if you were a guy smoking a cigar? You had to smoke it in some kind of a mesh so a spark wouldn't catch a woman's hoop skirt on fire?
That was a law in the 19th century in Prussia.
Ugh.
And there were many, many laws because, as I said, women weren't just a danger to themselves. They could be a danger to the people around them. I found a newspaper article about a Chilean church where 2,500 people died in a fire that was caused by a woman walking past the prayer candle.
Oh, my gosh.
In her skirt. So I believe Florence Nightingale, she was a big advocate of getting rid of the petticoats and the hoop skirt. She really encouraged women to, you know, keep it in check and only wear one or two petticoats because they were such a danger, especially for a working woman like her.
Mm-hmm. Tell the story. This is a fascinating story of Tarzan, Johnny Weissmuller as Tarzan and Maureen O'Sullivan as Jane, and what happened over the course of the Tarzan films, because there's a skirt story here.
Oh, I love this story. I'm actually a big fan of the old 1930s films. That's one of my favorite eras, partially because of the restrictions that went into effect in the early 1930s when talkies started, and even silent films. There weren't any rules regulating what people could say or wear, and some of the films from the 1930s, 31, 32 are quite risque even by today's standards. The Tarzan films are an excellent example of this because the very first one was introduced in 1930, and of course, as we know, they were serialized all the way through into the 1960s, and even today we still occasionally see a Tarzan film. But the very first one, starring Johnny Weissmuller and Maureen Sullivan, they wore the tiniest little skirts. Even by today's standards, it would be, I think, an R rating. There's a full frontal nude swimming scene.
Goodness.
Yeah, Jane takes it all off and dives in. She had a stunt double. There was an Olympic swimmer who swam for Maureen. But the first two films, she's wearing the tiniest scrap of clothing. And then the Hays Code went into effect in 1933, and Jane's skirt became longer and longer. And every year there was a new Tarzan film out, and every year her skirt became more conservative. Her top as well started to cover more and more shoulder. And by the 1940s, she's wearing a 50s housewife dress.
Isn't that something?
It's very conservative, and it was reflective of the storyline as well. She was living in a treehouse, and she had a chimp serving as her maid, and it was much more conservative and a lot less fun, I think.
Mm-hmm. And remind us of the Hays Code, what it was.
The Hays Code is a set of regulations that the Motion Picture Association put into play in the early 1930s, and it didn't really catch on until about 1933, and it strictly regulated what people could say, what they could wear, what they could do in terms of drinking alcohol on the screen, and certainly, of course, kissing.
Mm-hmm.
There were rules with how long a kiss could last and what angle it could be filmed at, and how much leg a woman could show on the screen.
We're going to welcome phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, and our guest is the author of The Long and Short of It, The Madcap History of the Skirt. Ali Bassi is with us, and the book really covers the whole history of the skirt with some fascinating stories. We'll look at the first ladies of fashion. She has some interesting things to say about some of the first ladies and the kinds of skirts they wore, and if we follow their fashion statements. We have to talk about the miniskirt, which I thought was just a ridiculous invention. But then you look at some of the other skirts in history and say, oh, my gosh, that was pretty ridiculous as well. So our number, 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050 if you're joining us in Milwaukee. And our guest is the author of The Long and Short of It, The Madcap History of the Skirt. We have a couple lines open if you'd like to join us. We'll just linking with our guest. The phone line was a little soft, so we're trying to make her presence a bit stronger. Tomorrow during this hour, we'll be talking about the American presidents. I guess tomorrow is officially George Washington's birthday, so we'll spend extra time on him. In the first hour of our program tomorrow, Sander Van Oker will be joining us, longtime journalist who's covered terrific stories and has a lot to say about the state of journalism, the way the press is covering certain stories, and that's going to be coming up for our shows tomorrow, which you are also welcome to join. Join us this hour as we talk about skirts, 800-486-8655. Richard from Madison is our first caller. Allie, hi, Richard.
Hi there. I just had a a comment about why there might be so many inhibiting or restrictive kinds of clothing for women, especially, say, in the 19th century. And I've just been rereading The French Lieutenant's Woman. And first of all, I mean, the obvious thing is weren't many of women's fashions designed by men. And secondly, weren't a lot of the sort of enormously bulky sort of fabric clothing designed to kind of show off the wealth of a woman to attract a man to sort of say, look, you know, this is what she's bringing with her. This is her marriage trousseau, in a sense. She's got enough money to buy a lot of fabric and to really sort of show that off.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Allie?
No, that's true. And that's sort of a trend that you can look back thousands of years and see that women and men displayed their wealth on the length of their skirts. Even, 27,000 years ago, you might see a tribe of people, and the wealthier people in the tribe, or the king, would have his skirt go below his knee, whereas the poorer people or the workers or the slaves would just wear very small loincloths. And that was how they displayed their wealth, even as far back as then. But And I also think the caller's point about men designing skirts or clothing in general for women has a lot of merit. Women didn't call the shots. I believe they did make choices about what they wore, but in the end, it was men who decided what they wore.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you look at the amount of fabric used, you write about, and I never thought about this, the wartime utility skirt, what those skirts were, tell me, please, and what happened when the war was over, World War II.
Well, in World War II, there were government restrictions on how much fabric you could wear, and the war effort was a popular idea. Everyone was contributing, and you were looked down upon if you were wearing extravagant clothing or wearing more skirt yardage than the government allowed. Of course, there was a black market, and certain people took advantage of that. But when the war was over, Christian Dior introduced his new look, as it was called, and those were the big fancy circle skirts with lots of petticoats underneath.
Right, yes.
The nipped waist and sort of extravagant tailoring. No one had seen clothing like that in years since before the war began in the mid-1930s. And initially, people thought he was nuts. They thought he was disrespectful, and women who wore his clothes on the streets in Paris were jeered at and attacked. And there were even certain places in the United States when the clothing first appeared, they banned it. They would not allow it in the store.
Oh, my gosh.
And, of course, once Hollywood got a hold of it and saw how fabulous they looked, the tide turned.
Right. Let's go to Callie from Milwaukee. Hi, Callie.
Yes. I wanted to ask your guest if she had found any research about the skirts worn in ancient Greece. Ancient Crete, and we're talking about 2,000 years B.C., I had read somewhere that the women wore skirts that were up to their breasts, but not covering their breasts, and long skirts. And I wondered, did you find any research or have you read anything about these skirts? Crete was also known as being really the fashion center of the Mediterranean of that time. So that's my question, and I'll take the answer up here.
All right, Kelly, thanks for the call.
It's a very interesting question. On ancient Crete, it was a fashion capital. They were very advanced in many of their techniques, and that included the women were excellent seamstresses. They actually, in the ruins of ancient Crete, found what could be dressmaker dummies. They were using techniques that we use today. They invented the A-line skirt, for instance. They invented what we now call the broomstick skirt or the prairie skirt, which had the ruffled layers. And interestingly, the Minoans were a female-run society. Their leaders may have even been women, for all we know. So that might have something to do with why they popularized the A-line skirt. Even today, we consider that the most flattering and comfortable skirt it's sort of a one-size-fit-all.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very interesting culture, and of course it was ruined either by an earthquake or tsunami or a combination of both, and their techniques were not passed on to other cultures, so people went back to wearing togas and wrap clothing.
Thanks for your call. Let's go to Bill from Oshkosh next. Hi, Bill.
Hi. A question, well, a comment first. I worked in New Guinea for a number of years, and the women wore a front kind of apron and leaves in the back held up by a belt. The men wore something very equivalent, nothing on top. And, you know, in 5 years or so, I never saw anybody really reveal themselves. Not that I was looking, but it would be pretty obvious. And I just was wondering if these weren't even skirts. They, you know, the bare at the side was completely naked, which would be very erotic in some Pacific cultures in here. And I was wondering the whole question of skirt length or no skirt length in this case raises all kinds of interesting questions about modesty and social class, you know, in more contemporary, not contemporary, more complex societies over the last 300 years. And you've just mentioned something about Crete and, you know, bare-breasted things. And I'm wondering if you could comment on that and maybe if there's any differences in class dress and what was considered modest and immodest in Europe.
Certainly, there was. I don't know. My book mostly focuses on Western culture, simply in an effort to minimize the scope of history, because there's so many interesting cultures around the world that I would love to continue to study. But certainly in the Western world, class culture had a lot to do with the size of the skirt and the style of the skirt and what people could afford to wear.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if that answers his question.
Oh, it does. There's an interesting article by Marvin Harris on beards and skirt length in the last 200 years in Europe that might be fun reading for you.
Oh, I'd love to read that. Thank you.
Great topic. Thanks.
Thank you. Thanks very much for the call. The poodle skirt. You can't ignore the poodle skirt when we were talking about you know, those big things with a lot of the petticoats. Why did that catch on the way it did, and people still resurrect it for Halloween or jitterbug parties?
Sure. Well, that the poodle skirt, in a sense, does relate to the previous caller's question about the social implications of dressing. I call the poodle skirt the ugly stepchild of Christian Dior's new look. It's the full circle skirt. It had the petticoats. But instead of being made with wildly expensive, beautiful fabrics, it was made with felt, and that helped it swing. but the poodle skirt was popular because it coincided with teenage culture. For the very first time in history, teenagers were contributing members of society. They were working. They were being heard. They were making their own decisions. They had more freedom than ever before. And the poodle skirt was one of the first garments that teenagers embraced, along with blue jeans and T-shirts and kilts, that they could call their own.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wildly popular. And, of course, it didn't just have poodles on it. It could have any sort of motif that the wearer was attracted to, telephones or fun, you know, jukeboxes, that kind of thing.
How long did it last?
The poodle skirt?
Yeah.
Well, that style of skirt lasted all the way through the late 40s. The poodle skirt itself was invented in the early 1950s. And, you know, into the 60s, people were still wearing that full skirt. We always think of the 60s as either being mini skirts or a hippie era, but they were still wearing those full skirts in the beginning of the 1960s.
Mm-hmm. Our phone number and some lines are open if you'd like to join our conversation. We're talking with the author of a very interesting and fun book, The Long and Short of It, The Madcap History of the Skirt. 800-486-8655, 227-2050. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, Allie Bassey is our guest, and she is a fashion, travel, and lifestyle writer who lives in Seattle, where it says she enjoys carousing in pencil, circle, and midi skirts. Lines are open for you. We'd like to hear from you. Who the heck invented and why, and this gets into the issue of modesty and immodesty, The miniskirt.
The miniskirt. Well, a couple people are credited with inventing it. As we talked earlier, with pantyhose invented in 1959, it made it possible for skirts to rise above the knee and even go mid-thigh. But the person who usually gets full credit for the miniskirt is a woman named Mary Quant in London in 1965. She raised the skirt length higher than anyone had ever dared to go, meaning mid-thigh. And she was a very hip woman. She was what, you know, they call a mod, and she had the severe black bob and dressed sort of space age.
Hmm.
And her skirts just got shorter and shorter, and everyone caught on to the trend.
Talk about restricting movement, though. It is true that, you know, I didn't wear those things because you couldn't walk around in them. You couldn't, if you grew up Catholic, you know, you didn't, maybe you did, but if you just didn't want to wear one of those because you'd be embarrassed.
Well, you also had to have a great set of legs,
yeah,
if you wanted to look good in them. And you know, some say that the short skirt lengths have contributed more than anything else to women's body issue troubles.
Mm.
When you're wearing something that exposes that much,
mm-hmm,
you really have to be in great shape if you want to look good in it. You can't, like wearing a poodle skirt, you can sort of fudge it and
mm-hmm
cover things up a little bit, but not in a miniskirt.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's interesting. So it did lead, and there's, you talk about this in your book, that it may have led to some eating disorders, et cetera, because you had, if you were going to wear those, you had to have fairly skinny legs.
Sure.
Hmm.
Well, I'm sure, I'm not sure, but I imagine that women have always had, and men, eating disorders to some extent. But I think the public eye was really looking at these women wearing these skirts. And like I mentioned earlier, teenagers were in the press for the first time. People were paying attention to them. So whereas, you know, women who watched their figures prior to this didn't get a lot of, no one was writing about it. When miniskirts came out, there were many, many, many editorials and newspaper articles. It was fascinating to read how enraged people were about the introduction of the skirt length. It really offended a lot of people, and so perhaps they were eager to criticize them.
Mm-hmm. And what made them disappear? They haven't disappeared totally, but what made them become not as fashionable?
Well, I think when they were introduced, they were just a craze.
Mm.
So they got a lot of press, and that's why they're always connected to the 1960s in that way. But the truth is, almost as soon as they were introduced, a year and a half, 2 years later, the maxi skirt was introduced.
Yes, right.
And this was a skirt that dropped all the way to the floor, and women had always worn floor-length dresses for evening wear. But in terms of streetwear or daywear, this was the first time that women were wearing a skirt that length since 1914.
Oh, my gosh.
When World War I happened, that was the very first time that skirt length came up off the floor and women were exposing a little bit of ankle. And this is, of course, because in World War I, a lot of women entered the factories and entered the workplace in droves. So the skirt rose, the hemline rose for practicality purposes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's interesting that at the very same time that the hemline went as high as possible, it also dropped lower than it had in decades.
Mm-hmm.
But the what I find cool about the miniskirt is that it broke the hemline barrier. Up until the 1960s, women had a one-skirt-fits-all mentality about fashion. Now they had a miniskirt they could wear, they had a maxi skirt, and then the midi skirt, M-I-D-I, which came right to the knee. So this was the very first time that women could choose for themselves what they felt comfortable in, what suited the season, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to wear a miniskirt in Wisconsin in January.
No, I don't think so.
So it gave women choices, and I think that coincided with the fact that they had a little bit of economic freedom for the first time.
Right. And what about requirements for certain kinds of clothing? I can remember years when you had to wear skirts, probably to work, and that you had to wear them to school as well. When did we break free of skirts?
I've thought a lot about that. And, of course, in the 1970s is when it became acceptable for women to be seen shopping or going out and about in a pair of pants. And jeans, of course, had been really popularized by the sort of hippie culture
mm-hmm
of the 1960s. But wearing pants in the workplace was a whole other issue. In the 1970s, there were a lot of women working in offices alongside of men, but men were still calling the shots. They were still the bosses, and telling women that skirts were not acceptable, or I'm sorry, pants were not acceptable as a professional garment to wear. And I find it funny because when the miniskirt was invented in 1965, workplaces had no problem accommodating that look.
Uh-huh. Interesting, right.
In particular, for women who wore uniforms, they had no choice but to wear a miniskirt. There wasn't an option in some jobs to wear something longer. But pants were another story. That was considered just improper dress. And even in the 1980s, I believe, it was still more professional to wear a skirt. So not until the late 80s or even the 90s has it been perfectly fine where an eyebrow isn't even raised to see a woman wear pants in the workplace.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the first ladies. You, early on in the book, have the first ladies of skirts and what their thoughts were about skirts. And in some ways, they influenced Americans, right, as to the kind of skirts that we wore?
Certainly. I mean, first ladies were famous people back before we had Hollywood and celebrity culture. So people paid attention to what they were wearing.
Mm-hmm.
Martha Washington, the very first lady, it was actually her husband who was the clothes horse. George was sort of a dapper gent, and he selected all the clothing for his family.
I didn't know that. So he selected Martha's hoop skirts.
He did.
Huh. Interesting. Mary Todd Lincoln, if you go to the Lincoln Museum in Springfield, Illinois, they have a lot of Mary Todd Lincoln's dresses there. She liked to dress up.
Yeah, I think in her day she was criticized a little bit because she was an educated woman and she had very refined tastes. And I think some people thought she was a little highfalutin for their taste.
Mm-hmm.
But she took a lot of pride in the clothes she wore and had a very large collection of skirts and dresses. And she enjoyed sort of flaunting her extravagance.
Mm-hmm. Interesting story about Edith Roosevelt.
Yeah, I love her. She was so thrifty. I didn't know that until I read a little bit more about her. But I found a great story. I believe it was for an inaugural ball. She actually used the skirt from one dress and cut it out and attached it to the bodice of another dress and made herself a new dress.
All right. That's the kind of thinking I like. Nancy Reagan.
Nancy, she's sort of known for being a fashion plate. And one funny story that I learned was that, and I'm sure we can never confirm this, but she loved to wear designer clothing, and she would also often borrow clothes from certain designers. And occasionally, that clothing wouldn't see its way back to the designer.
Ah, Nancy. Jacqueline Kennedy.
I think when people think of fashionable first ladies, mm-hmm. they don't think any farther than mm-hmm. Jackie. Of course, she was the most fashionable of all, and probably the first lady to wear maybe not a mini skirt, but she definitely wore them above her knee.
Mm-hmm. And Mamie Eisenhower, you know, I did. If you don't even read the paragraph about her, and you remember pictures of Mamie, you remember what she was wearing. You remember the skirts,
mm-hmm.
don't you think?
Sure. Well, she was one of the people who really embraced Christian Dior's new look. She loved those full skirts and petticoats, and I believe she even traveled to France so she could buy mountains of them.
Barbara Bush.
Not someone we think of when we think of fashionable first ladies. I would say her big contribution to fashion in the American culture was costume jewelry.
Mm-hmm.
She was a big fan of it and didn't feel the need to wear diamonds and precious stones. She was very content to wear her costume jewelry to fancy balls, and it was a look that caught on.
Hmm. So those pearls weren't real?
Well, I can't speak for all of her jewelry, but perhaps not.
All right, let's welcome more phone calls. We'll take them in a moment. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're talking with the author of The Long and Short of It, The Madcap History of the Skirt. And it goes back thousands of years to talk about the world's original garment. Ali Bassey is with us, and we welcome your phone calls about it really is an interesting history because it reflects good time, economic times, bad times, times of decadence, times of concern about morality. It looks at men as designers and what they've designed for women, and men wearing skirts, and then men's legs becoming what everybody talked about back in medieval times when, you know, instead of how great women's legs are, how great men's legs are. We welcome more of your phone calls, and we'll take them in a moment. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls now, and Peter from Madison is next. Hi, Peter.
Hi. I have something kind of humorous. My father actually made his living in pantyhose, not literally, but selling them. They just love the obviously the mini skirt. And what's kind of interesting is just recently he sent me a ruler that has printed on it, "How high is high enough?"
Oh, my.
So, but, and besides that comment, did you happen to see the show Men in Skirts that was at the Metropolitan Museum of History, I think about 3-4 years ago?
I did not go to that show, but I do recall reading about it. Did you go to it?
Yes, I was back east visiting. My wife is a seamstress, and so we made a point of going in and seeing the show. Very interesting, and how they try to reintroduce the skirts to men in the past, you know, 30 years or so that just never caught on.
What would you think about wearing a skirt, Peter? Do you want to wear a skirt?
I don't think so.
No?
I mean, baggy shorts is good enough for me. So, anyway.
Thanks.
That's what I'd say. Thanks.
Thanks very much for the call. See, I don't know how I understand that pantyhose was an important invention in order to wear miniskirts. I don't know how women were convinced to wear pantyhose. They're so uncomfortable.
But they're more comfortable than garter belts.
I guess. I guess, yeah.
I think so.
Yeah. Do you think we'll see a time when more men will be wearing skirts?
I don't know. As the previous caller said, designers have tried to reintroduce the skirt. And quite recently, I think it was, you know, I'm not sure, the late 90s or maybe even just a few years back, I think it was Jean-Paul Gaultier introduced a man's skirt that was kind of a mini skirt. And it was laughed right off the runway. It was sort of introduced, and no one ever saw anyone wearing it. But you do see men wearing kilts more and more, and not just for weddings or special occasions, but occasionally you'll see a guy running around downtown Seattle, for instance, in a kilt. And there's a company that's based out of Seattle called Utilikilt, and they make these very manly, sort of heavy canvas kilts that have a place for your, you know, your tool belt to hang and a little strap for the hanger, and and there's a culture, at least in my city, of men who wear these utilikilts.
That's interesting. We go next to Ilan from Milwaukee. Hello.
Hello. I have actually a couple of things. Number one, I haven't read the book, but it seems to concentrate entirely upon fashion for the upper classes. Now, when you go to Scandinavia, you go to Baltic states like Latvia, Estonia, and when you go to the Alpine countries, you will have traditions preserved. You can see the folk gowns, the costumes, the dress that was worn by the people who actually work. And one thing that also there's a great distinction in that case between the everyday dress and the festive dress. Now, also, I've noticed that when women are in charge and the fashion, these dresses, this kind of costume was dictated by women. They made it. It is comfortable. It is appropriate. Are you listening?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. I have a lot. I have this cell phone that's on my phone. So. And that is what I have noticed. And this is where, as long as women were in charge, the men, well, they did wear pants. And this is also where the long pant begins, which only entered men's fashion after the French Revolution.
Right.
You will notice that.
Ellie.
No, that's a good point, what you said about in the book, or at least our conversation, talking more about the upper class. And that is true in the book to some degree, that I do focus more on fancier skirts, probably just because it's the extreme version of each skirt I'm talking about. But I do address what people wore every day. I think the sort of working skirt or the traditional skirt you're referring to is called a dirndl, most commonly, and it's just a gathered skirt that's very simple, it's very comfortable, it provides a lot of ease of movement, and it usually fell, you know, to the ankle or went up and down according to the class of person who wore it. And I don't discuss the dirndl that much because there wasn't a lot of variation on it through the centuries. But you're correct that women have worn that for years and years and years because it's a practical, comfortable skirt for wearing.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the call. Joan from Milwaukee. Hi.
Hi. I have a company that I've designed called Damsel in Distress, and my byline is wear a skirt instead of a dress, and that there's a skirt for every level of stress. So I've had a lot of fun with that. And I made some skirts, and I fashioned them after the hobble skirt, which was around 1910, 1914. It was a very short-lived skirt, but it totally restricted movement. It was very, very tight at the bottom, very long, sort of Eastern influence, where women's clothing was very restrictive.
Hmm.
But as soon as World War One broke out, they needed women in factories to work, and the hobble skirt disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I made some long skirts, and I took ribbon and tied it around the knees so that you could tie it in the back and wear it as a hobble skirt. But my thing was that you could untie it, let the ribbons hang at the side, and be a 20th century woman.
I think that's a great solution to the hobble skirt. And
funny.
When people often ask me, what was your favorite skirt to write about? Because in the book, I divide each chapter based on a different skirt through history. And I always say the hobble skirt was the most fun to research. It was one of the more extreme versions of a skirt. And the fashion editorials that I read about it were just a riot. And because I think it was so short-lived, it was very interesting to research and a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was very short. Another thing that I did was I have another skirt that I just write all over. And I make them out of sort of canvas, and I start writing at the bottom so that the reader, when the person that's wearing it, when they're sitting down, they can read this story. It's called The Skirt of Theory. And I just write anything that I can, and I kind of doodle on them. So I have had a lot of fun. But I wanted to tell you one thing. Remember when you were saying about the skirt and when it came into in school? I went to a very large high school outside of in the Chicago suburbs. It was absolutely 1963 that I graduated, and then the next year girls were allowed to wear pants.
Oh.
But previous to that, we had to kneel on the floor, and you not like you would be in church, but you kneeled on the floor and you sat sort of back on your legs, and your skirt had to touch the floor.
Oh, well, right. Interesting.
And they actually made us do that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well, I love skirts.
Thanks. Oh, I can tell. I can tell you do. This subject is right up your alley. Thanks,
yes.
Joan, so much
You're
for your
welcome.
Call. Thanks.
Thank you.
We go to Marina next from Mequon. Hi, Marina.
Hi. I would like the guest to speak to an issue that just may be my perception. It appears to me that as you go shopping, there are less skirts available in favor of the capri pants or the
yeah.
shorter pedal pusher.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering, is that just my perception or is that correct? I go and I look in the row and I'm like, oh, this would be a cute skirt. And then it's, you know, then it's a capri pant. And it's like so frustrating.
I find that frustrating, too. And, you know, the bad news is I don't think that's going to change this season. They're calling this the year of the dress. And, you know, it was just New York Fashion Week a week back.
Hmm.
And there weren't a lot of skirts. Everything it was either a dress or pants.
Hmm.
I can't say that there's going to be a lot more skirts on the racks anytime soon. But who knows? Hopefully it'll make a comeback.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks very much for your call. I only like to wear skirts in the summertime because they're a lot cooler, I think. But, man, Wisconsin winters wearing a skirt? No, thank you.
Oh, no way. I mean, I am a fan of fashion in general, but I do like skirts all year round. And I'm a big outdoors person, and I have certain skirts I wear camping. And
really?
Hiking, and I just find it to be easier and really? Cooler. And I certainly get a lot of comments on the hiking trails, but I like it.
Mm-hmm. Tom from Fitchburg, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Tom.
I spent some time in southern India, and down there, men wear something called a lungi. And it's a nice piece of cotton cloth, nicely batiked. And they wrap it around their waist, similar to men wrap a towel around their waist after showers sometimes. Mm-hmm. And a lot of men, that's all they wear. Other men put a white T-shirt on over that on their top.
Mm-hmm.
But I got in the habit of wearing those. They're very comfortable, and they're very nice because they were just beautiful.
Hmm.
And this was recently that they're still wearing them?
This was in the early 80s.
Hmm.
But, of course, it's subtropical down there, so...
Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably a lot cooler to wear a sarong-style skirt than binding pants.
Right.
Right. Hmm. But I very much enjoyed that.
So do you still wear it? Tom, do you still wear it?
No, I did here for a while.
Mm-hmm.
For a couple of years, I think,
mm-hmm.
in the summertime.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Tom, very much for your call. David is next from Cumberland. Hi, David.
Hi. I'm not a fashion person, but a question that came to mind is the gaucho pantsuit or skirt, I don't know, based on the Argentina pampas grass area, where they, I was kind of wondering if that emanated from a regular skirt that the men would wear and that stuff, and then over a period of time, because there were cowboys, horses, and that stuff, that they might have attached, pulled it up between their legs, and then eventually kind of caught on for like a women's skirt as well. I don't know.
Hmm.
Yeah, I don't know the full history of the gaucho, but I do know that in Western cultures, women were wearing a version of what they called a split skirt, which was basically a gaucho but long that went all the way to the floor. And a lot of that had to do with that their lifestyles were becoming more active, particularly because of bicycling.
Mm-hmm.
I found a great quote from Susan B. Anthony, who said that bicycling may have done more for the emancipation of women than anything else. And that was true to some regard, certainly in fashion. They were wearing hoop skirts one day. The bicycle became a craze, and women started wearing these split skirts that contributed in some way to keeping the folds of the skirt out of the bicycle spoke.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for the call. We go to Carol from Cambridge next. Hi, Carol.
Hi, what a great show you've got on today.
Thank you.
I'm wondering if you've noticed, perhaps out in Oregon where you are, I've seen a fashion trend that's showing up. Looks like gals are taking a pair of cotton hip-hugging briefs, and to that they'll attach from the points maybe 30 or 40 fancy handkerchiefs.
Hmm.
So the whole thing hangs in pointed ruffles.
Hmm.
And then you just simply wear that as a skirt.
Huh. I have not seen that trend. You said that's in Oregon that you've seen that?
Oh, well, you're in Oregon, correct?
I'm in Washington, but yes,
Washington.
Very near to Oregon.
I've seen it frequently here in southern Wisconsin.
Hmm. Oh, how interesting. I really like watching what young women wear. It often creeps up to what the adults wear, but I think teenagers are a great gauge of fashion trends.
Yeah,
and a lot more risks, and they're more experimental and have more fun with it.
Absolutely, and these are so cute because when you walk, it's just a poof of ruffles.
Hmm.
How cute. Yeah.
Great. Thanks for the program. It's a great topic.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thanks, Carol. Yep. Thanks very much for the call. So are you doing book number two? Did you find that there was so much material that you wanted to go on with it, Allie?
I would love to expand on the topic. You know, I'm sure any writer says this, you find a lot more information than you can fit into a book.
And, uh-huh.
There's so many great stories attached to skirts.
Yes, right,
not just
right.
the factual histories, but the sort of mythology of them.
Yeah. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on your show. It's a pleasure.
Allie Basie, she is the author of The Long and Short of It, The Madcap History of the Skirt, published by Harper Entertainment. She is a fashion and travel and lifestyle writer who lives in Seattle. And we thank Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, Mimi Notstein for on-air production here in our studios, and thanks, everybody, for your calls. Tomorrow, Sandra Van Oker is with us the first hour of the program. Wonderful, smart, long-time first newspaper and later network reporter, and then we'll be talking about the American presidents, because tomorrow really is, I believe, George Washington's birthday, isn't it? They get us so mixed up with President's Day and all that, but tomorrow is George's Day. But we'll talk about all the presidents, so join us for those conversations. Please, thank you. I'm Kathleen Dunn. News ahead, you are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.